The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
This is Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hardim. Toronto's news, today's talk, 640 Toronto.
Happy Canada Day, my friends. Welcome to Hi-Fi Radio, a show about money. Yes, loonies and toonies and eagles. That's a U.S. dollar. And, of course, they have their Independence Day on the they are the 4th of July. And, of course, we're Canada, the 1st of July. And, you know, frustrates me on Monday when we are chilling and the U.S. will be open. I hate that. I hate when the U.S. is open and we are closed. We usually miss out. If U.S. goes up, we don't seem to have follow through on the Tuesday. And then the U.S. will be closed on Tuesday, so we're going to be open alone. Can we not just take both days off or, you know, communicate with our American counterparts? Let's line this up. But it'll never happen. Every single year we have to go through this. And so it's a funny couple of trading days. But you know something, my good friends? This is about you having wealth and building wealth. And I did my little rant around the office today. Every now and then I do that. I just like to walk around and throw ideas out with my comrades, stir things up a little bit, have some fun, create some energy. It's very important. It's all part of going back into the office and rubbing shoulders with your counterparts in any industry you work in. Obviously, some industries you have no choice, but other industries you are given a choice to stay home. And still some people don't want to go back. I encourage you, go back to work. It's good. We're all social beings. But a number of things I want to cover. We are going to be talking more and more about charitable giving on this show. The Holy Trinity Church was actually just behind our office and also behind the courtyard. I had the privilege of actually doing a little tour of it. I'm going to be bringing on one of the directors next year to talk about the homeless crisis in Toronto. But I've said before on this show, I can even help homeless people become millionaires. Homeless people who panhandle, and they all do because they all end up with some money, some mad money, if we shall say, if they could just put $5 away a day. If a homeless person can put $5 away a day and do that for 40 years, right? Start at age 25 and every day put $5 away and earn a 10% rate of return, which is a doable rate of return if you simply buy the broad North American stock market. Let's take the S&P 500. It's generated about 11.5%, almost 12% return over since 1952, I think it is, 53. So let's use 10. That's not a crazy number. Do that for 40 years, $5 a day. And you know something? It is just under $1 million in 40 years. I repeat, $5 a day turns into $1 million in 40 years. I cannot stress these points enough that you must start immediately a savings plan if you don't, and an investment plan. Again, anyone who is 23, 24, 25, graduating school, please, this is going to be one of the most valuable lessons that you have received in the last 4 years. It's an arrogant statement, but it's factual because some people know this, but most don't do it, which probably is then an exercise for Jack in discipline. Jack's military background, so he likes that word discipline. He gets discipline. I think that's only what keeps people from their success rate, because the history tells you, history has now been mapped for 125 years of good, accurate financial data. You buy the broad market, you make money. It grows up, as I said, 11%. I think people should save at least $1,000 a month. And I'm just speaking average family. You save $1,000 a month. You start as soon as you turn 23. Do that for 40 years. You know how much money you had at $1,000 a month for 40 years at 10%? $6.3 million. That number, I believe, is doable for every Canadian who begins a plan at 23. And the key is to get started. And the second key, and the most important key, is never stop. How do you never stop? Automate it. The same way money is coming out of your bank account to pay for your mortgage or pay for your car payment, automate it. And you see, you can't afford it. You got a car payment, but that's all you can afford. Maybe you drop the car payment, take alternate means of transport. That in itself, cut off a latte. It's incredible how you can come up with $1,000 a month. I believe a homeless person can do this. I certainly know you can. Our guest, who's going to spend some time with us, he's a credit investor. His name is Matt Chandro. He's founder and portfolio manager at Fulcra Asset Management. His company manages about $350 million, which is interesting because that's exactly what Jack and I manage as portfolio managers. Matt is a sub-advisor to an amazing credit firm right here in Toronto, Richmond Hill, Unionville area, called Lysander. We use Lysander product to give us fixed income, credit, bond, call it what you want, exposure. With that intro, Matt, welcome to Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Appreciate you spending some time with us. How do you like that math? $5 a day, $1,000 a month. That's my first question. My second question to you, do you do that? And if so, when did you start?
I agree with the compounding math that you lay out there. It's the key is sticking to that discipline. And I think even if it's, you said as young as 23, that's great if people can do that. But even if it's once they get settled into a career later in their 20s, that's also equally as good. But whenever
that's the day to start, Matt. The day you begin working, and you should begin if you graduate at 23, okay, maybe if you're an academic, you can go to 26, 25. Pick your start point. But you're a bond investor, Matt. You manage bonds. And truly, when people speak about, people often misuse the phrase compound interest. Oh, I want compound interest, therefore buy me some stocks that give me compound interest. It doesn't work that way. You're sort of trying to mix oil and vinegar together, or oil and water. So bonds are the real instrument that give you compound interest, which is when interest pays interest on the interest. So you receive a coupon payment, and then you're also getting additional interest on that. They actually don't give you the coupon, right? They hang on to and compound it. So the interest, you get interest on your interest. But anyways,
you want to have gains on top of your gains. And that's the other point, Wolf. You talk about discipline, saving $5 a month, saving $1,000 a month, coming up with these 40-year numbers of $1 million, or what was it, $6 million with $1,000?
$1,000 a month at 10% rate of return, it turns into $6.7 million.
Right. So my point is
6.3, excuse me.
Discipline to save.
Yep.
Discipline to let compounding work over time.
Yep.
But also discipline to stay away from the manias, from the stories, from the fear of missing out, from the SPACs. There's always going to be someone pitching you, some snake oil salesman pitching you something. No, but 10%.
I
say 10% is a good return. It's a fair return.
So, yep.
But you're not.
It's ample.
You're not reaching for return, and you're not taking unnecessary risk, which I think is very important.
Well, again, Matt, you can pipe in here. And again, part of holding bonds in a portfolio is to mitigate risk, and a 10% return would basically mean you have to own all stock, no bonds in the portfolio. But in such a portfolio, we just spoke with a client today, and they had a pause for a second. He's like, you're going to invest with us. You have to expect at some point your portfolio falling 30%. I should have been a little more honest and saying you should expect your portfolio at some point to fall 50%. It'll be temporary, but it does happen about once a decade. Bonds fall less, Matt. So let's talk about bonds. Why do they fit in a portfolio? Finally, we have some interest rates we can work with. What kind of downside risk are you exposed to in the bond market? Help us build a case for your asset class, because I think it actually makes more sense now than it has in a long time. And maybe the 60-40 portfolio comes back into vogue.
We do something very specific within the fixed income market, but I would say generally it's very positive in terms of what's, obviously there's been some mark-to-market losses, i.e. the prices of bonds have gone down because interest rates have gone up. But this is a great time to be thinking about investing generally in fixed income. There's no question about that. But you could certainly deconstruct that into obviously government bonds and then corporate bonds. And we're in a specific part of the corporate bond market. It's very exciting. It's probably the most exciting time for me in my career of 25 plus years managing fixed income.
I want you to build on that. So why is the bond market so exciting right now?
Because interest rates have gone up. I think every person that listens to this discussion would, if they have money invested, would realize that. Certainly if they have exposure to fixed income, and if a bond is got a longer maturity date, i.e. longer duration, it's likely that bond price has dropped in value. But if you're deploying capital today, at the prices that you see, your yields are very attractive. And so overall, yields are much more attractive than where they were a year and a half ago.
We're going to take a quick break and get back with Matt Shandro. He is the founder and portfolio manager at Falk Asset Management. We're talking bonds. Interest rates at these levels, bonds make some sense, probably really good sense. We don't talk a lot about the bond market, but you want to learn more about it. It is a key asset class, and it can help you weather certain storms. Hi-Fi Radio, 640 in Toronto. Wolfgang Klein by your side. My brother, Jack Hartle, partner, producer of this show. By your side as well. More Money Talk right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Say live and let die.
Welcome back, Disco Ducks. Let's go to the disco, indeed. You know, it's funny, pop music tends to do very well in an economic upturn. That was the mid-70s when that came out, and mid-70s was a very, very challenging period for the markets. Many false starts, the Dow could not get above 1,000. It was basically flirted between 500 and 1,000. Almost a lost decade, and inflation was very, very persistent. Interest rates were rising, and the economy was slowing. It was actually a period of stagflation. And it's funny, through my 20-year career on Bay Street, many times, a number of times, markets were reflective as being similar to the 70s, but it's never the same. It's always different. That's what is the same. Difference is the same in the market, but the way people act, that is the same. Almost, that's a true or false question. The way people act is always the same. True or false?
I think that we have the same vulnerabilities. And yes, we're the same as we were during the tulip bulb mania. We're the same during the the 1800s. And yes, the constant is human nature. I agree with that. However, as I said, we are highly context sensitive as people. And to think that across the board, this time is different, to say that, I think it's probably not true in this context. I would say that a significant portion of people's minds is about rising rates, is about macroeconomic slowdown, and people's willingness to take a flyer on a bubble, I think, is significantly lower during other times. So it's not that people are necessarily smarter, it's that the environment is chastening some of their more speculative impulses.
The point I'm trying to make here, almost, you're getting academic on me here, buddy, which is fine. That's what you can do. I'm a basic, 101 within every course. Understand basic math, understand basic economics. That's the stuff that really counts. You know why? Because they play that song first. They want to open up with a hit song, give them something that actually really, really counts. And we can get off to the 13th derivative of this form of mathematics and sure apply that to such a microcosm of the world. But for the average person out there, I like to keep things really, really simple. I want to go back to the themes change. Is it oil? The world's got to eat. What happened to that? The world's got to eat. Potash and agrium are going through the roof because the world has to eat. Got to get some potash. No, we're going nuclear because there's a nuclear renaissance going on. Oh, it's different this time. It's different this time. Uranium goes through the roof. Oil. There's no more oil. Running out of oil. 150. No, excuse me. Too much oil. Zero. Negative oil during COVID. 150. Oh, yeah. So my point there is when you get periods like that, something's ripping higher, people do want to participate. People do act the same. And then the inertia, the Sir Isaac Newton, a body in motion continues in motion. If I could snowballs and becomes, it's like the universe. It's just snowballs. It's expanding, right? And so does people's enthusiasms towards a hot sector. And then when it becomes, turns into a black hole, that's what we'll call them, a black hole. There's another point, by the way, I want to just throw out there. Jack and I chat on our little drive to the studio every week, just about all kinds of market stuff. And the point was about a stock that went from $7 to 40 cents. And Jack and I totally agree that you don't want to own anything that goes from $7 to 40 cents or whatever. You know, hey, I sold it at $7. You know, I paid three. I sold it at seven. Now it's worth 40 cents. Is that a good thing? No, it's not a good thing. It means basically you're buying junk and you got lucky. You want to buy a stock, sell it, and eventually watch that stock actually go higher. Why? Because that means you're buying the right stuff. You're playing in the right sandbox. But when you get too caught up in emotions, then you're going to end up in the wrong sandbox. And again, Amos, do you agree with what I just said there?
You just nailed one of the biggest investment biases that almost nobody talks about. So this is risk aversion. People buy something and get out too soon. And that happens a lot. I have actually NVIDIA. I bought NVIDIA at like, you know, $6, sold it at 20 and missed out on about $1.5 million from the subsequent, you know, 10 years of it. I think if people can do their DD on why they're buying and have equally good due diligence on why they're selling, I think you'll have much less missed opportunities. So your point about buying junk, don't buy junk in the first place. If you're like dead set on speculating, limit the allocation to something very low, I would say under 1%, and learn how to manage positions if you're going to be actively managing at all.
Which most people are not capable of doing any of the above. They're not capable of doing, honestly, you're not, trust me, you're not, you won't manage a position. You either buy more of it or just watch it go to zero. So why bother? Why frustrate you? You
know, but the reason why they spec wolf, they go out and speculate, is because investors are greedy. And Amos, can you speak to the fact that watching your neighbor get rich and you not participating, as opposed to investing towards your long-term goals and objectives? Talk about the difference of those two things and investment behavior.
Oh, absolutely. People are highly socially sensitive, and there's been a huge upswell in academic research in the last like 5 years about social research. My neighbor did this, so-and-so did that, and so I'm going to participate. You know, Twitter and social media made it infinitely worse. There's actually entire startups dedicated just to this social influence of stuff. I'm not going to name drop any of them, not necessarily promoting any of them, but social finance has gotten huge. And social comparison is something that's innate to humans, and is, you know, there's no getting around that. So I think your point about comparison, you could also say about the market itself. I think that you actually made a very deep point there, that in a way it doesn't really matter what the market is happening. The reason you're investing is to meet future cash flow obligations for you as a specific investor. That's the value that you guys bring to your client.
Hey, Amos, I want to take you to a different direction, same topic. Again, if you're just tuning into Hi-Fi Radio Show About Money, I am Wolfgang Klein, along with my partner, Jack Hartle. Any questions, wolfgangklein.com. We manage money. We do it very well. We show our performance each and every month, fully transparent. Go to the website, wolfgangklein.com, and see how much money we make and don't make for our clients, and sometimes we don't make money. But over the long haul, we make a lot of money. Amos Nadler, he's a PhD, chief scientist, founder at Professor of Wall Street. I was in Siena. Siena is a beautiful town in Italy, and in it, it's a fortified little town, and a bunch of towers are in these towns. Look like bell towers, just little tower, big towers. Total penis envy going on in that town. And what it was people with wealth would build towers. And the wealthier the family, the bigger the tower. Since in the last 100 years or so, a number of the towers came down, but there's still about five or six of them. You can actually walk up inside many of them. Just take a look at the top of the tower. You can look out and overlook the Tuscany Valley. It's very beautiful, and be higher than your neighbor and look down on your neighbor. So that's what consumers did. That's what people did. Wealthy people did back in the 15 and 1600s. Let's fast forward. Do people do the same thing, i.e. show off their wealth? Yeah. Look at Ferrari. Look at Louis Vuitton. Stocks are flying. Luxury high-end brands are ripping. Read a report from Morgan Stanley. They're speaking about bags. Bags, my friend. And they were going through price ranges for a 1,000 euro bag, which is about 1,500 Canadian, to 15,000 euro bag, which is about 20 some odd thousand Canadian. I think, Jack, you in the report saw someone had a $50,000 bag. But who walks around with 15,000 euro bags? And guess what? 1% of 1% of the population does. But let's talk about that segment. And again, I go back to people's behavior doesn't change. The environment does. If they're building towers or buying bags, it's the same move. Talk about that, Amos.
Oh my gosh, I love that topic. I actually have a paper on this. We found that increasing testosterone level in men increased their desire for luxury and status goods. It's like one of my most highly cited papers is specifically about that.
Send it to us, please.
Sorry. Yeah, 100%. I'll be glad to send you. Just look it up online, but I'll send you a free version. But your point stands. Like, it's evolutionarily built into us to signal our wealth, our biological fitness, and our resources to other people.
Yeah.
And your point about it evolving over time is brilliant because it's so true. And it's also true that different social groups show it in different ways.
Whoa. Stop right there. Amos Nadler, you chief scientist, founder, at professor of Wall Street, PhD kind of a guy, is right now that trade, every research report I read is predicated on China participating. The newly created middle class and upper middle class, right? Gangnam style type. Right? That's who wants to show off their brands. And it's ironic when you go through the different brands, the target market for each brand, of course, is unique and different. And the move they also pull, which goes back to what I said at the beginning of the show, supply and demand. They restrict supply. Restrict supply. This stuff ends up on eBay, and even Russell Oliver, I buy your jewelry. He's also buying handbags because they, believe it or not, Jack's laughing. Jack doesn't get it yet. But then every now and then Kate shows up with a pair of On shoes. Oh, she has the On shoes now. Because Kate's wife's so much ahead of Jack in terms of new trends. Fashion is what Jack does. He's a hockey player, which is cool. It's all good. He's really good at it, too. It's funny when people get to know Jack. Hey, well, do you know he's got a fight card out? Check it out, friends. Fight guard Jack Hartle. You get a kick out of that part of him, too. But the high-end brands are working. When I travel Europe as well, almost, it's amazing when I go through Designer Alley and I look at these price points and my jaw drops. Again, I like to go to the market in Italy and pick myself up a leather jacket for €170. Gorgeous. It smells nice. It's real. Designer Alley, yeah, it's about a $17,000 garment. Not for me. I'd rather buy stock. Almost, if there's anything else in terms of high-end brands and the newly created middle class out of Asia you want to build on, please, over to you.
This holds true in Asia. It also holds true in North America, Canada, the U.S., is that one of the weaknesses of people is that we prioritize investing in social signaling. But if you imagine taking those, sneakers or that jacket or that car or that, tattoo or whatever, and then think about that in terms of its future value. I know, Wolf, I'm getting very academic here, but if you can get normal people to see the $100 instead of an object that will wear out in 6 months, or that $100 has a future compounded value that's significantly more, that's where behavior starts to change. And it's tough because it's against our instincts. It's against who most people are. But those who can consistently make that trade-off and reduce their present bias, those are the people who will have significantly better futures.
Jack can do it.
I was going to say, Jack can live do it. Wolf, you live within your means. I would rather buy the Hermes stock than buy the Hermes bag and sell the bag for $40,000.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yes, I'm with you, Jack. I totally agree. Yep. Anyways, it's a fascinating, fascinating discussion. Amos Nadler, a PhD, chief scientist and founder at Professor of Wall Street. Real pleasure, my good friend. We will get you back on oh so soon. Next in the show is an old friend of ours, Mr. Richard Davis. He is a tech guru, now working for
Unity Software. Wolf.
Unity Software, it's a content creation software company. Brilliant stuff that Unity does.
They partner with Apple.
Very exciting. Yeah, we'll have to talk to Richard about that. Let's get to break. Get right back to Hi-Fi Radio 640 Toronto.
Don't go anywhere. There's more Hi-Fi Radio in a moment on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today.
Welcome back.
I want to.
I know a man who is part of it. New York. His name is Mr. Tony Dwyer. Welcome back, Tony. Yeah. Tony Dwyer, our chief strategist. He serves as Canaccord Genuity's head of the U.S. Macro Group, also chief market strategist. He sits on the firm's U.S. Operating Committee, 30 years of experience, and, well, he drives a Bombardier Ski-Doo. I like him. Welcome back, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And thank you for popping into our office the other day. You enjoyed hanging out with Jack and I. You enjoyed the little music in the background, didn't you?
Oh, it was great. It's great to see you guys all the time.
Well, thanks, Tony. Thanks, Tony. Interesting market, an interesting environment. What I picked up in the last year and a half, we said it in our conference call in January, you are a strategist. And I'm going to say for the last 18 months, most strategists that we pay attention to, and there's quite a few of them, both within our firm and outside our firm, have been pretty negative, quite concerned. I was going to line up Black Sabbath paranoid for you, but you're not a paranoid kind of a guy, but you're vigilant, I shall say. Your job is to help us make and protect. And there's times to reap and times to, I guess, sow and times to, well, I guess, stay at home and batten it down. But here we are, Tony, 18 months into the bear market. And, well, technically, according to the textbooks, it's over. Once the market's up over 20% from the low, a new bull market has begun. Could it be a head fake? Yep. Do I think it's a head fake? Not sure. And you know why I don't even care as much anymore? Because I just buy good businesses. And that's my new mantra. Forget about the market. Just focus. Buy good businesses. Yeah, rotate through them. Then you can watch, you know, a whole bunch of good businesses, but own the ones that are going up and try to avoid the ones that are going down. But, you know, even businesses that go down aren't bad businesses. But when Tim Hortons is going up and I walk by that, well, I'm not going to talk about the quality of food, but the lineups. I see lineup after lineup. I feel comfortable that I'm going to be okay. So, Tony, where are you at with this bear market, you know, new bull market beginning, offensive, defensive position that investors should take?
So, Wolf, as you know, and you and Jack know, I'm what I call light and tight, which means a little bit defensive and not Armageddon.
That's good.
I think the data is very clear that we get a recession at some point over the next couple of quarters. I think it'll be, believe it or not, after today's GDP data, this week's GDP data, it doesn't feel like there's going to be a recession. But I think the data is pretty compelling that there's one that's going to be here pretty quickly. And that once there is, you get one more push lower in stocks, and it's that point that you really want to get super bullish.
So, okay, Tony, sorry. So what did you see in the GDP? Tell us about the GDP data. What did you see?
Well, it came in at 2%, which was above expectations, and it came in with personal consumption a little bit stronger than people had expected, but it was relative to expectations more so than a super strong number. So that's led to a big rise in treasury yields, which is, when I look out at the intermediate term, it's not a positive for stocks when yields are making a new cycle high in a levered system. So the market's feeling a little bit better today that the economy's okay and we're not in recession. But I think at this point, I wouldn't be chasing the upside in the markets because I don't think it's appropriate relative to what the outlook should be over the next 3 to 6.
Tony, we had two quarters of negative GDP, I think, last year, right, Jack? And I was saying, but yet no one called it a recession. Is there any worth in what I'm about to say here in that maybe we had the recession, maybe it's already behind us and we're in a new economic expansionary period? I want to ask Tony the question first.
So that terminology, and for the listeners, that means the recession is defined as having two negative GDP, real GDP quarters in a row.
Yeah.
And I would not say a 7 to 10% nominal growth environment is a recession. So that definition is typically always associated with significant weakness in industrial production, a big rise in unemployment, consumption really coming down. That wasn't the case here. So it was more that inflation was up an extraordinary amount that caused the negative prints versus weak sales.
Okay, let me just ask you a simple question. I just want to ask you a boneheaded question. Are you playing with the math and changing the rule by making that statement?
No.
Okay.
No, because I'm not the one that makes it up. It's called the National Association of Businesses makes up the NBER, makes up the data. I'm not the data maker.
But sometimes the math does get altered. It needs to be tweaked a little bit.
Well, we're great at that. Aren't we great at
that? Yeah.
To fit our story, but... You know, there's no way that you're going to be able to convince me that a 7% growth environment on a nominal basis, and for the listeners, that means if you have a 7 to 10% sales growth environment, that's not negative growth. But if inflation's at 9%, so if sales are up not 7%, inflation's up 9%, you have negative GDP.
Yeah, and that's what that was.
Yeah, exactly.
So go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, well, it sort of just reminded me of the fact when they were talking about inflation and the Fed kept talking about, you know what, it's transitory this time. They were sort of changing. They didn't want to raise rates because inflation was transitory. I just wonder if NIBOR is going to look back a year or two from now and say, actually, that was a recession.
I don't know how they're going to do it unless they change their entire definition, which you can get off the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can just do a word search or a search on whatever your favorite.
Okay, so Tony, my next question to you is, are we in a new bull market?
Well, we've been in a bull market for the mega cap tech stocks for sure. From a broad market, I would say not, Wolfie. As you know, when I was in your office, the median S&P stock is up 3% year to date. So the S&P 500 is up 14 or 15% on the back of these huge eight companies that have rallied so much. But the average stock is up about 3%. The New York Stock Exchange advanced decline lines in the trading range. It's not a weak market. I'm not going to suggest it's a weak market in any way, but it's not a huge new everything's going up market. You're getting some nice participation in the broad market over the last 3 days.
Yeah, because I want to talk to you about that. Good. I want to talk to you about a couple of subsectors that Jack and I have paid a little bit more attention to this week. Number one, the airlines turned the corner, pushing higher. Number two, home builders continue to push higher, and that obviously is a supply issue. They can sell anything they can produce and then some because there's just such a shortage of supply. But number three, timber, which was left for dead, really had a pop in the last couple of days. Wildfire, home build, but we're going to take a quick break, Tony. So I want you to think about timber. I want you to think about the home builders. What was my very first point?
The airlines.
Hi-Fi Radio, 640 in Toronto. We're going to take off right after this with Mr. Tony Dwyer. He is the head of our U.S. macro group and chief market strategist at CG Wealth Management. It's a show about money. We want you to have more of it. I repeat, if you save $5 a day, and you compound at 10%, the S&P 500 has done 11 over the last 7 years, $5 a day, 10%, 40 years, just under $1 million. That's a strategy for a homeless person. You save $1,000 a month for 40 years. You start the day you graduated from university or college or wherever, high school, 40 years of saving $1,000 a month, that's 12 grand a year, gets you to $6.3 million. Who wants $6.3 million? You stay tuned and I'll help you out.
Want to make more money? Stay tuned for more Hi-Fi Radio on 640 Toronto. You're listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Show about money. That town is money. London is money. I think Tony Dwyer of New York. Mucho's respect to you, of always. And New York is a cool city. It's an amazing, world-class city. They say Toronto is as well. That one I wrestle with, but sure. They want to say it is so. But London, I think London is New York meets Paris. That's what I think about London. Man, it's a cool town. You frequent London frequently, Tony. And what I'm going to say to you is just coming back from that fantastic city, it is a hoppin'. There is economic activity in London like I've never seen before. Tony, let's just have fun for a nanosecond, if we may. America is a wealthy nation. But many people said, well, if you really want to find the real wealthy people, go to Europe. That is where Uber international wealth hangs. Speak to that, Tony, but just about some of the oligarchs or people from the Middle East, just the type of money you've sniffed around London as you've, you know, gone to the Canaccord offices there for some presentations?
Buddy, I'm in a blue collar guy in a white collar world. I don't hang out with that kind of money. They won't hang out with me. So that works out great. I'd rather go in the pubs and just say hello to a normal person. I try not to hang out with the uber rich.
No, but stop it, Tony. I'm talking about, you know, we're talking about money. You hang out in the financial capitals. So you do presentations right to big PMs who have big wealthy clients. London has a lot of old wealth in it. There is uber wealth. And again, old wealth in London, they do not wear bling. No. They understand compounding wealth and modest investing. But I don't know. You must have come across billionaires. You've rubbed shoulders with a few billionaires in London, Tony, haven't you?
Yeah.
I'm not asking for their names or their account numbers. Just, yeah, Wolf, I rub shoulders with a couple. I'd be happy with that response. If not, did you rub shoulders with Rod Stewart when you were there?
No, buddy, I am nowhere near that level.
All right. Anyways, let's
I rub shoulders with you and Jack. That's my game.
Be careful. He's got a fight card in his hockey days. He'll put you into the corner. That's the only thing about Jack. He's a big hand. You take his hand, you lose your arm. He's such a strong man. He's a good man, though.
The only thing stronger than Jack's body is his brain. So there, Wolfie, there you have it.
That's why he's working with me, man. Hire people smarter than you. Always do that. Hire people smarter than you. Jack, when you played hockey, do you not want to play with like hockey players that were better than you?
You always want to push yourself, Wolf. When you push yourself, when you play with people that are better than you, you help improve. You help improve your process. And we try to do that, you know, day in and day out. And again, hanging out with guys like Tony, hearing what they have for strategy, listening to the analysts and the resources that we have at Canaccord. Those are the opportunities that retail investors don't have, but they can gain an advantage of by hiring people like us.
Tony, sat down with a client, just brought him on board, another new happy client to the Wolf on Bay Street team. And I said, and they said, well, we certainly hope this is going to work out better than our previous advice. I said, it will. I said, the only thing you can't do is panic when the market falls again. The market will fall again. I said, you have to prepare yourself that the market will fall at some point 50%. In fact, at some point, every 10 years, the market has about a 50% puke. Yes, I said the word puke, and it does that. And the key is don't fall victim to the panic selling. But what has happened in the last 20 years is all investors, especially seniors and retirees, have had to either reach for yield or take on excessive risk because interest rates precipitously have fallen in the last 20-year period. So the previous GIC investor of 25, 30 years ago, or T-bill investor or municipal bond investor, has gravitated towards the stock market in the last 20 years, more so than ever, which put death nail into something called the 60-40 portfolio. 60-40 portfolio would have 60% of your money in stock, 40% in bond. It was considered a typical textbook balanced portfolio. With bonds being down as much as they have been in the last 2 years, the 60-40 portfolio lost a lot of oomph. I ask you now, Tony, with bonds being annihilated, we just had a bond portfolio manager on our show prior to you, working with Lysander. Matt does a great job. Do you think you're at a more appropriate level today, Tony, to have a balanced portfolio with both bonds and stocks in it if you have, say, a 20, 25-year time horizon?
Well, Wolfie, as you know, I like to say I look at the data. I don't go by what I think. And the data is very compelling to bonds right now. I'll give you an example. So everybody that is listening to this show is probably familiar with the term price-to-earnings multiple, right? P-E multiple, as it's called. That's how you value the market. We value the way that you can value it against the bond market is to the way that you can value it against the bond market is to do an EP, the inverse of the PE, mm-hmm. which means the earnings yield, right? So the earnings yield on the S&P 500 using the current consensus number is about 5%. The 6-month T-bill is currently trading at 5.4%. So you're getting a 40 basis point excess return in riskless investment mm-hmm. in a 6-month U.S. Treasury T-bill versus the risk return of the U.S. equity market. So that would favor bonds even over stocks. So having at least a 60-40 makes sense to me.
I want to go through a bit of math quick, and then Jack's got a salient point he wants to share with us. Again, friends at home, what Tony just said, the PE ratio, the price earnings ratio. So if the stock market that trades at, let's say something trades at $20 and makes a dollar of earnings, has a PE of 20. 20 divided by 1 is 20. What Tony did with the bonds, he does the exact opposite. He takes 1 and then divides it by 20 to get an earnings yield. 1 divided by 20 is 5%. So that means that the company's earning a 5% true return. And if a bond pays 5.4%, you're in fact better off to buy the bond than the stock, because that bond is also risk-free. Stock is not risk-free. So that's a very, very good math. Sorry, Jack, go ahead.
Well, it depends on your time horizon. I'll add that, Wolf.
Yep.
Because if you look at it, okay, you got a six-year T-bill.
Six-month T-bill
that has a 4 or 5% yield. S&P 500 in and around the same. But over time, you expect the S&P 500 to compound their earnings, I'm going to say, around 8 to 10%, something
yep.
like that. So if you're thinking long-term as an investor, and you do have reinvestment risk on that T-bill. So when that matures, because yep. bonds do mature, what rate are you going to be able to reinvest in?
Well, but again, the average PE for the market is 15, and 1 divided by 15 is 7.5, correct, Tony? And that gives you equity risk premium. That's really what you're looking for, equity risk premium, or Tony, I know you are, and it's not really there in the market. Matero Burge, same thing. He said ERP, as they call it, is not in the market. In other words, bonds are actually more compelling than stocks at these levels.
Yeah.
But I think what Jack and I are going to, what we believe is the market is actually looking now beyond 2023 and looking to the end of 2024, where the market is slated to earn how much in 2024, Tony? Just under $250, correct?
Well, that's it. I think that's an inappropriate expectation, but yeah, that's the current consensus number.
That's consensus, yeah.
To generate that, you need...
So it's not totally inappropriate, Tony. It's consensus. Sorry.
Yeah, it is, because...
No, it's not.
How are you going to grow when you have higher... Well, who knows? It could work out that way, but I think you have to have the Fed and the Bank of Canada and the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan, not the Bank of Japan, but all of them need to reduce rates pretty aggressively to kickstart a new money cycle to create more money to grow into earnings of that level.
Jack's got 15 seconds here. Go ahead, Jack.
I just want to make the point. Last year was the worst year for the 60-40 portfolio. We were talking about that.
Yeah.
That's when everyone was giving up on it.
Yep.
That's where the best opportunities
usually
in
is.
The market
usually
are.
Usually is, yeah. When people give up on something. They gave up on
the death of equities, Wolf.
They gave up on the FANG stocks, those mega cap stocks that Tony talked about at the beginning of the show that drove this market. They gave up on those last year, which means that they're operating off a low base and had the greatest opportunity to go higher. We were out of them too, Jack. Fortunately, we got back into them. But we're able to move, well, if need be, very quickly. Tony Dwyer, I want to wish you a happy Independence Day next year. Of course, Canada Day is upon us. So we're going to be closed. You're open, and then you're closed. We're open. It's going to be two dead days at the start of next
yeah.
week. So enjoy it. Be safe, my friends. Tony, you be safe as well. And keep up the great work. We love you here. We really, really do. And we appreciate all you do for
and
us.
And vice versa, guys. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. Well, that's it for Hi-Fi Radio Show about money. Do you want more of it? Give us a call. And my friends, with great power comes great responsibility. We're here to help you build wealth. I also want to encourage all of you to share some of it with those in need. Share some love. Lots of love required in the city. I am going to bring on a couple of really good charities next week that does a lot of really interesting grassroots work to help those who don't have any money. But I do want to do a seminar one day for homeless people and help them build wealth too. We can all build wealth. But between now and then, please extend a hand if you have a little bit of extra cash. It is Canada Day. God bless you. Love you. I'll speak to you soon.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Harthill, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any questions about money, email wolfandjack@wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. Join us again next week. The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Corus Entertainment.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.